Real News Network. The news and life in a real way.
This is the only show we disrespect anybody.
Real
News. Something wrong? Yeah. It's just too bad you don't know what it is.
There is no one-to-one correlation between a hip-hop lyric and a subsequent material condition that leads to criminality. That's a mythology.
This is the only show we disrespect everybody, but we say no disrespect first.
I got what people thought was a $10 million bill. They didn't give me no $10 million. That's a lie. They just told y'all that so y'all could want to rob me. I'm from Mississippi. We hold guns. I always know if you see David Banner, I got a gun. It is legal. You need to start bearing arms. Because maybe if they knew you had guns that were legal, they wouldn't kill our damn kids. Because you'll kill somebody if they don't bring your dope back or you stand on your joints. And we so gangsta in our music, but when people kill our children outside of black people, you do nothing. And they know you are not going to do nothing.
Welcome back to another episode of Real News Network. Well, y'all know the format. Let's jump in. We don't have time to waste, as usual. So our first story in our newsworthy segment takes us to a Business Insider article about a church board member wanting to buy a gun for protection. And it brings up a bigger question. You know, should, you know, black Americans start to promote arming themselves? You know, what are the ramifications of doing so? You know, but let's get into it. So let's go into the article. Let's be clear, first off, the article was pure propaganda to get black people, you know, on the side of the NRA. Okay, now in the article, Horace Augustine said that the Charleston shooting made him fearful and think that he needs a gun. You know, now the question is, should black Americans start legally arming themselves, and why? Well, you know, to answer this, let's go back. Remember our Civil War discussion? Okay, so the South was worried before the Civil War that the North would take their weapons. Again, because they thought the North were kind of, you know, beholden more so to England and all that, you know, or the British and whatnot than, you know, the Southerners were, who were more detached. So, you know, in the Bill of Rights, they added the right to bear arms against, you know, any tyrannical government. Okay. You know, now, they basically added the right to bear arms. This was in case the British infiltrated the U.S. government and imposed, like, you know, imperialism again, you know, with kings and queens and peasants and all that. You know what I mean? So the North had a vested interest in that, too. You feel me? So the South also needed the weapons for the slave patrollers. You feel me? Now, the slave patrollers were law enforcement specifically for slaves. Kind of like now, except, no. Yeah, I was about to say, no, it's kind of like now, but no, wait, yeah, they use horses now too, so, guess it's kind of like now, my bad. So, it's one or two, you know, slave cops versus several slaves or the potential of several slaves. So, you know, obviously they needed weapons or they felt they needed weapons, you know. So let's bring it back now, you know, to the present day. Why should black Americans start legally arming themselves? Won't it antagonize the racists to start targeting us? You know, like they'll start targeting us, like blowing up our kids in a church, or, you know, like assassinating all our true leaders, or, you know, it might even cause, you know, the violent white supremacists to, you know, go into a church and kill 9 people in a terrorist act against the United States because one victim was a U.S. senator. You know what I mean? Oh, they're already doing that? Oh, okay.
So let's look at the statistics. The United States is home to 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prisoners. Think about that. Our incarceration rate is 4 times higher than China's. We keep more people behind bars than the top 35 European countries combined.
One question, Mr. President. Who's primarily in those jail cells? I'm sorry, one more question. Do you think that, you know, there are fathers or mothers in there, in, you know, the jail cells that you're talking about, that because of this mass incarceration, it has some kind of effect on their children? I'm sorry, sir. One more question. When you get a felony, they take away your right to have a vote and your right to have a gun, correct? Hey, you know what? Let's go back onto the story here. Legally arming ourselves. Now, question. Would cops handle traffic stops differently if they knew there was, you know, a higher percentage chance of black people owning legal guns? You know what I mean? Like, they realize, okay, they're not going to be victims anymore. Not that we're promoting any violence against police officers. Clearly, that's not the case. But what we're saying is if they have in the back of their mind, okay, this person is a legal gun owner, I'm not going to do A, B, and C that might violate the law. So again, if you're listening, we're talking about police officers that would violate the law, not the good police officers. So let's get back into the actual issue of gun rights, especially pertaining to those in African American community. But let's make sure we get this disclaimer in. First, we're going to talk about safety, but we're going to get this disclaimer in. This isn't directed towards those banging or doing illegal activities. Those guys already have guns. We're talking about the legal brothers and sisters, the legal people out here who are trying to live their life, etc., etc. Now, let's be clear. This is a deadly weapon. Okay, this is not a toy. It's not a game or a movie prop. You know, people could get injured or killed by it. You feel me? So respect the weapon. Okay, now let's just go through some safety tips or some safety rules, especially pertaining to you know, young African American people, or just people, you know, minority people in general. Okay, and poor white people as well. Y'all are always in the same bucket. In case you never hear me say poor white people, whenever I talk about minorities, I'm talking about you as well. So just jump on board. Now, number one, never play with it or show it off unless you're teaching someone about gun safety. You understand? Number two, lock it up. All right, you ain't a gangster. You ain't about that life. You ain't living that gangster life, okay? You don't need it locked and loaded with no safety, sitting on the table with your kids eating breakfast, okay? Take it easy, John Wayne. You know what I mean? All right, number three, it's the first thing that you'll ever buy that you don't actually want to use. Okay, because no one actually wants to be a murderer, you know, no sane person. You know, you probably have a job, kids, etc. You got too much to lose over a stupid argument where you end up spending, you know, shooting someone and doing 25 to life, you know, not to mention the nightmares and stuff like that. I mean, it's just not worth it. So understand that, you know, it's not like the movies, you know. Number four, get training. Okay, go to a gun range, ask questions, and practice. Okay, now the people at the gun range, you know, initially they'll start to look at you crazy, you know, but don't worry about them. Do you, okay? You aren't doing anything illegal, you know, and at the end of the day, you are the customer, and the customer's always right. So take some training courses, because the more familiar you are, you know, with the weapon, the less you will want to use it on someone because you see its power and effect. You dig? So let's go into the last one. Number five. Lastly, and this is important. This is very important to black people. Okay. As a black person, you're already convicted. Okay. So make sure if you have to use it, I said, if you have to use it, you must follow the rules of standing your ground. So whatever the stand your ground laws are in your state, you must follow those rules. You must be educated. You must be a lawyer when it comes to those particular rules. Don't just go out and get a gun and think that it's all good. I saw the tape, you know, on the news. I can carry one. No, you need to understand what it's about and the legal ramifications of carrying a weapon. All right. Now, let's be clear. Don't pull it out to scare anyone, you know. Don't be the aggressor. Don't pistol whip anyone. Don't follow someone like George Zimmerman, because that's antagonizing a person than saying you feared for your life. You know what I mean? So make sure you're in the right. Make sure you've exhausted all of your options to avoid using it. Think of it this way. Once you pull that trigger, your life changes for the worse regardless of the situation. So whether it's in your bed at night or in a jail cell, make sure you can sleep at night knowing that you did the right thing by humanity. Okay? Because humanity is taking away, you're helping humanity by taking away someone who will go out and take other innocent victims' lives. But at the same time, you have to make sure that you're taking away someone who is that person, who is the person that's going to take away these lives. So I think you understand the point behind this safety issue. You need to be very clear on the laws. But let's go ahead and move on to our next story in the newsworthy segment, drugs and the U.S. government. Okay, matter of fact, I think we have an anonymous agent here to discuss the official U.S. policy on drugs. Sir?
Take what you want, tie the ass up, just don't get no blood on the dope.
He's a jackass.
Just don't get no blood on the dope. Bring it back all white, don't get no blood on the dope. Bring it back all white, don't get no blood on the dope. Bring it back all white, don't get no blood on the dope.
Interesting. Welcome back. Let's jump into our next story in the newsworthy segment. That brings us to a newly released book with the title of Drugs as Weapons Against Us. The CIA's murderous targeting of SDS, Panthers, Hendrix, Lennon, Cobain, Tupac, and other activists. Now, disclaimer, I have not read the book, but I've checked out this guy's interviews, and I actually heard him on the Joe Madison show, where Joe Madison said that his book was very well researched. So someone I respect is giving him respect. So let's go into the book real briefly and go into some of the things that he's talking about, okay? So the U.S. government, per the book, saved 1,000 or so Nazis, German Nazi scientists, bought them over to start the infamous MK Ultra program, which was also known as the mind control program that used, you know, psychedelic drugs or psychoactive drugs, because the Nazis had already been experimenting with these drugs on the Jewish people during the Holocaust. So the U.S. was trying to use it because they were using it for the eugenics movement, which is the movement where the rich Americans, rich white Americans, funded and promoted laws enforcing the superiority of Nordic, Germanic, and Anglo-Saxon people, or in America, white people. So it was so popular, eugenics was so popular, that even black people like W.E.B. Du Bois, people at Tuskegee University, Howard, and Hampton universities, they believed in eugenics. Okay? Now, they believed that the top blacks were equal to the top whites. Okay? That was the difference between, you know, the rich white Americans who funded the eugenics movement and the black people. The black people felt the best of the best were the same, but they believed in eugenics nonetheless. So, you know, anyway, W.E.B. Du Bois, who's a prominent black figure in history, he even said, quote, "Only fit blacks should procreate to eradicate the race's heritage of moral iniquity." Okay, now iniquity equals, you know, or means, you know, bad or wicked or something like that. So W.E.B. Du Bois is saying only fit blacks, who chooses who's fit, who says who's fit, anyway, that only fit blacks should procreate, only fit blacks should have babies and have families and stuff like that, because, you know, we need to erase the heritage of moral wickedness. Okay, this is how we felt about each other. So that goes to show you how deep brainwashing of the mind can be, that you believe an entire race, your race, is inherently evil. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy. And he was thought to be a conscious black leader at the time. You get what I'm saying? Go back and see my self-hate episode. I forget which one it is, but check that out. So the eugenics movement was funded by rich people who promoted, you know, it was promoted by poor people, though. So the eugenics movement was funded by rich people and promoted by poor white people. Does that sound eerily similar to the Tea Party libertarian movement now, huh? Where there's a whole bunch of rich people funding it and a bunch of poor people talking about, you know, states' rights and, you know, less taxes. It's like, wait a second, that sounds good, but at the end of the day, it's really just another version of the eugenics movement, okay? Now, let's move on to Tupac, okay? So now the CIA had been following the Shakur family in New York City before Pac was even rapping, before he was even born, you feel me? Because the Black Panthers in Oakland and on the West Coast, they had made the Shakur family, who was Tupac's father, Tupac's mother's boyfriend at the time, he was the head of the Black Panthers over in the New York area, okay? Now, the author says that the Black Panthers and the Shakurs decided to turn Tupac into a gangster rapper to appeal to the gangs to form a truce so that we can politicize them, or so that they could politicize them, you know, or basically give them political power. So we do know he was, you know, Tupac was at, like, you know, one of these Baltimore performing arts schools where he met Jada Pinkett and all that other stuff. You know, he was, if you look at the videotapes of Tupac before, you know, when he was younger, he's, you know, real happy, real lucky, you know, oh, in the world, real artsy type of dude. You know, but what this book is saying, and they're not trying to demonize Tupac. What they're saying is that he was used by the Black Panthers and that movement to get a hold of the gangsters, because, you know, all of the as the Black Panthers dissipated, the rise of gangs came about. You know, so if you know the story of the Crips and Tookie Williams and all them, you understand though that's how the gangs came to be. So fast forward, you have now those Black Panther leaders who they kind of went underground after they, you know, COINTELPRO went after them and destroyed them. You feel me? So take a look at this book if you have a chance. It's very insightful as to just the things that I've read about the book. So I'm kind of dying to get into it. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you have to think about all of these people that were leftist activists, you know, and how drugs were used against them. You know, think of all the weed we smoke out here now and all these other new pills, new drugs that these young cats are doing. You think that they'll be able to get to them through the drugs? Well, history shows it's extremely possible, and if not possible, almost inevitable.
This huge explosion in incarceration rates. In 1980, there were 500,000 people behind bars in America. 500,000 people in 1980. I remember 1980. 500,000. Today, there are 2.2 million. It has quadrupled.
One more question, Mr. President. You know, never mind. Let's just move on to the next story in our newsworthy segment. That brings us to Chattanooga, Tennessee. July 16, 2015, a gunman killed five Marines when he first drove up to a Armed Forces Career Center, shot 25 to 30 times, wounding one Marine, then drove 7 miles away to the Navy Marine Corps Reserve Center, where he killed five servicemen. All right, now the shooter, 24-year-old Muhammad Yusuf Abdulaziz. This guy, now, he's a 2002, so he's a recent college graduate with a degree in electrical engineering. Now, from 2009 to 2010, he did an internship for a federally owned corporation called the Tennessee Valley Authority. Now, prior to that, he was a high school wrestler and trained as a mixed martial artist. I know, right? Like, if you look at this dude's picture, he looks like every other Americanized ethnic person trying to hide their ethnicity. You know, but when you see his recent pictures, he looks like, you know, one of Bin Laden's kids or something, you know, no disrespect. But you get what I'm saying? Like, he had the beard and everything, you know? So something about this just doesn't make sense to me, you know? Now, Gina Mule, a waitress who was there at the first shooting, she's at a restaurant next door to where the Armed Forces Career Center was. She was quoted as saying, "I looked out of our window and I seen the guy in his car, a silver Mustang drop top, a white guy, and he had a high-powered rifle. and was just firing shots into the recruiting office. Okay? Notice she said she saw a white guy. Okay? Now, since he had that big beard, you know, that Muslim men typically have, you know, it's kind of hard for me to believe that the witness would classify Muhammad as a, quote, white guy. I don't know, I'm just saying. Especially since Gina Mule worked at the restaurant next door to the recruiting center. And, you know, if you're in the service industry, you have an ability to recognize, quote unquote, the types of customers you have. You know, this is as a tip indicator, you know, to know what kind of tips and what kind of service to give them. A lot of them do it, right or wrong, a lot of them do it. So this is somebody who classified this person as a white guy. Okay, all right. Even with the beard and all, okay, all right. Now, a friend of Muhammad Abdulaziz, the friend's name was Abdul Razak Brizada, he said Muhammad changed after visiting Jordan in 2010. He said, quote, something happened over there. He was the coolest guy, always positive about people. Whatever caused this to happen, it's not him. That's not how he is, end quote. But hey, we'll see as the story develops. But, you know, for now, my third eye is twitching. Aside from that, let's pay our respects to the servicemen that were victims of this horrible shooting. 25-year-old Carson Holmquist. 26-year-old Randall Smith. 40-year-old Thomas Sullivan. 21-year-old Squire Skip Wells. And 37-year-old David Wyatt. Rest in power. And thank you for your service. The National Executive Director of Council on American Islamic Relations, Nihad Awad, said, quote, such inexcusable acts of violence must be repudiated by Americans of all faiths and backgrounds. I agree.
CNN, Fox, MSNBC did a decent job. Peaceful until the cops came with their guns out. And they never told anybody about cops tear gas babies. I saw it. I saw them snatching people off of the streets who did nothing.
Speaking of, let's get into our last story here in the newsworthy segment. That takes us to the story of Sandra Bland. July 13, 2015, Sandra Bland, a Chicago woman, was found dead in her jail cell in what police are calling a suicide. Sandra Bland traveled from Chicago to Texas for a job interview at her alma mater, Prairie View A&M University, of which she did get the job working on student outreach. So she was stopped on Friday, July 10th, for improperly signaling and allegedly, you know, assaulting a police officer. Okay, so improper signaling of a lane change usually is code for we needed a reason to pull you over that is subjective. You know? So some of you not familiar with the South, or more specifically this area in Texas, Waller County is between, you know, a liberal kind of, if you would say liberal, Houston, and a liberal, if you can say liberal, Austin, Texas. But keep in mind, Austin, Texas is split up amongst 14 different counties and whatnot. So that's how they keep the liberal folks from having power in that city. So it's a liberal city, but they don't have the power. Anyway, so these small towns that surround these larger cities are stuck on that, you know, good old boy stuff, you know, that Andy Griffith, Barney Fife type stuff, you know. So they pulled her over, you know, because they could. You know, as we can see from the video, she was probably being disrespectful, or as we say in America for non-black people, defending her rights as an American citizen. And the cop overstepped his purpose, which leads us to the point we see her face down in the video. Okay, another case of basically up north city slicker, quote, not knowing their place and how it goes in the South. You know, so back to the story. Now you have a woman that's traveled over 1,000 miles for a job interview, for a job that starts in a few weeks. She gets arrested, And also, we have a report that she tried to post bond. So she called a bail bondsman. So when you call a bail bondsman, that's to get out of jail. Okay, so she's done all of these things to all of a sudden want to commit suicide, right? Okay, not to mention statistics show women choose less violent, you know, or painful methods of suicide than men do, or, you know, than actually hanging themselves. You know, that's more of a male particular trait of suicide, so to speak. Again, no disrespect. But don't let facts, you know, ruin your argument, right? Let's use common sense. Does the woman in the video trash-talking the policeman who unnecessarily became abusive towards her and had her in, you know, a vulnerable position now, does this woman in that video who is in a vulnerable position yet still spoke confidently and stood her ground, you know, even before she knew she was even being filmed, does that woman seem like she's committing suicide days later? You know, do those personalities match up? Even with PTSD, it's like, why, what did she asphyxiate herself with? How did she even have access to anything to asphyxiate herself with? Again, this same sheriff's office or this same county has been given citations because they had another suicide back in 2012 where they were cited for not particularly following the protocol to prevent that, meaning have someone come by and check on the prisoners every hour at least. It's ridiculous. Anyway, moving on. Waller County Sheriff Glenn Smith, the leader and example for these cops that took her over or pulled her over and had her face down and slammed her face into the ground, this guy was fired from being a police chief in Hempstead, Texas, prior to this, by their city officials, and was quickly, I want to emphasize, quickly hired as Waller County Sheriff. Do you see the problem there? That's the problem. Police misconduct only gets them transferred. I repeat, police misconduct only gets them transferred, not fired, and definitely not killed while being unarmed, and definitely not killed while being an unarmed woman already in your custody.
So the basic math is such that if we get a large increase in our television deals, the players are going to get half and the cap will go up. The marketplace seems to be suggesting that we're going to get a substantial increase in our next television deals.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. That was NBA Commissioner Adam Silver talking at a press conference recently. But this particular sports segment is dedicated to keeping your third eye open. You know what I mean? When it comes to this new contract negotiation that's about to happen with the NBA and the Players Association. So stay focused, all right? Anyway, let's move on to the relationship portion of the podcast, shall we?
It's more like I can feel your presence beside me, and she's telling me that your story's not done yet, that you lost your way and you lost your faith, and I just have to get you here just to help you get it back. Does that make any sense?
And I don't do everything how you want it.
More than you know.
But you can't say your man don't be on it.
Cause I know truth love.
Alright, welcome back. Let's jump into the relationship portion of the podcast. So for this episode, we're going to look for a talk you off the ledge friend. That's right, a talk you off the ledge friend. That's someone who has your back enough to tell you if you're wrong about something involving your relationship. You know what I mean? Now you're mad, you're heated, you know, you're not thinking straight. You got a good woman or a good man and you ready to cut them off because of something simple or irrelevant. We all been there, you know what I'm saying? But sometimes you need to get space from the situation, you know? Call that ride or die friend, you know, that will talk you off the ledge, you know? My ledge homie so thorough, you know, sometimes he cut me off mid-vent like, suck it up, bro. You got a good woman. You know what I mean? And it's crazy because, you know, I'm so mad or, you know, frustrated. We all human, you know, but I'm like that until he said that, you know, and I forgot all the good things she does for me in that moment. You know what I'm saying? I forgot why I wifed her in that moment. You know what I'm saying? I forgot our whole future over, you know, spilled milk or dirty dishes or, you know, any other dumbass thing that takes away from the focus from building our relationship and building our future. You know what I mean? Now, a warning, be careful, all right? Beware of the undercover hater friend. You know, you've been with your man or your woman for years and, you know, you have a petty little fight and that friend is like, oh, leave his ass or leave her then, do it. Like, you know, or something negative. You know what I'm saying? It's not that you need someone to always tell you each time your partner is the right one, you know, but you need someone who will look at the situation and immediately think, regardless of whatever, immediately think, how can I fix this? Or how can I help this? How can I help them? You feel me? So find yourself a talk you off the ledge friend, you know? And when you do that, you'll be building your relationship.
Can tell just by your face this part of us been gone.
All right, play. Well, hey, y'all know what time it is. It's the hardest part of the podcast. That's right, the call to action, where we try to do something, anything positive, just to get in the habit of doing something. You feel me? All right, so for this podcast call to action, we're gonna say, hey, go volunteer. Come on, it only takes an hour out your week, you know what I mean? Something small, doesn't have to be big. You don't have to build a school in Africa, you know what I'm saying? And if you have kids, it's all good. Bring the kids. That's even better. Bring the kids. Let them see you. Let them show them how to give back to society rather than just tell them or expect them to do it. You feel me? Lead by example. Hey, well, listen, y'all, appreciate y'all tuning in. You know, it's always love. I appreciate spreading the information. I appreciate y'all giving me the information and researching and doing all that stuff to keep us all awoke. You feel me? Anyway, listen, appreciate the love. Any questions, comments, or concerns, hit me up. Real News Network, the number 5@gmail.com. Yo.
You know what, ladies and gentlemen, this boy don't have no home strength. Back in the day, whenever a young boy would disrespect one of the elders, we had a thing that was called
the
the only show we disrespect everybody.
There is no one-to-one correlation between a hip-hop lyric and a subsequent material condition that leads to criminality. That's a mythology.
This is the only show we disrespect everybody, but we say no disrespect first.
Since my first campaign, I've talked about how in too many cases our criminal justice system ends up being a pipeline from underfunded, inadequate schools to overcrowded jails.